I took off and I went and hung out with some friends of mine. I'd like you to make welcome my brother-in-law, Jan, and his new wife of 1 month, Marie. They're sitting right over here. Make them feel welcome for me, would you? So this is my wife's brother, and he moved out here to California a few years ago. Anyway, we got to go and just chat for a few minutes. It's good to see him and his wife here. Thank you guys for coming. Live about an hour south of here. From what I understand, we had some people drive a little way to come here today. I want you to know I really, really appreciate that. Tell me real quick, how many of you drove more than half an hour to get to this location? You guys like everything in California is more than half an hour away. What are you talking about? Okay, how many drove more than an hour to get here? Okay. How many drove more than 2 hours to get here? Wow. How many drove more than 3 hours? Looks like it's between you guys. How far did you guys drive? 230 miles? Wow, 230 miles. Did you guys beat that? You did. How far? 400 miles. Oh, give them a hand, guys. They are the winner of tonight's free DVD, one free DVD, for driving 400 miles. Wow. Do you guys already have this one? Incredible Creatures That Defy Evolution. Thank you guys for being here. That's a series done by Job Martin. We got it out there on the table. Incredible Creatures That Defy Evolution. Really good stuff. And it takes animals and says, hey, how would this evolve? Job Martin used to be an evolutionist. And when he was teaching in school, his students would say, well, hey, how would this evolve? He'd be like, well, I don't know. And then they'd bring something else. How would this evolve? And over a five-year period, he got converted to being a creationist. And now he travels around and lectures on creation, and he did a series of three DVDs and actually has several series out now on creation. And that one is called Incredible Creatures That Defy Evolution, a really, really good series there. And for second place, 270 miles, you think that deserves a free DVD too? What do you think, guys? I think that deserves a free DVD too. I'll pick out any single DVD on the back, and you get to have that as your free DVD. I know I could have let you choose, and I didn't, and now it's unfair, and now everybody's going to be mad, but that's okay. We'll get over that. All right. If you could, make sure your phone is on vibrate or silent so that we can not be interrupted while we're in here. I'm going to do the same. Yeah, I'm good to go. And we have got a lot of stuff to cover. So far, we've talked last night a little bit about the age of the earth, about the Big Bang, about the two basic worldviews, the creation worldview and the evolutionary worldview. We talked about what the world was like before the flood. We talked about how man lived to be over 900 years old, how the world before the flood was very different than it is today, how there was a canopy of water that surrounded Earth's atmosphere, how there was more atmospheric pressure. So we've covered a lot of material. We talked a little bit about the cavemen, the so-called cavemen, prehistoric animals, animals that grew a lot bigger before the flood than now we are here we are today, people that got to be a lot bigger before the flood. So we've covered a lot of information. If you're kind of like me, it leaks out a little bit, okay? But we did cover a lot of stuff. I want to talk to you right now, this session and the next session. The last one is what I am really passionate about. Now, I'm passionate about this information, but this new message in this next session that I'm going to give called God Quest is really, really good. This session I'm very passionate about. It's called Lies in the Textbooks. Because the bottom line is evolution is in the textbooks as fact. It's not normally taught as a theory. Typically, evolution is assumed in the science textbooks. This is a major problem because evolution has never been proven. Our ministry offers a $250,000 reward to anybody that has scientific evidence of evolution. You saw it on our flyer right there, $250,000 offer for evidence of evolution. Fold it, it's supposed to look like there. Isn't that cool? These are our new flyers, so I hope you like them. If not, who cares? All right. There is no evidence of evolution whatsoever, but it's being taught in the schools as a fact. Now, what I'd like to do in the next 45, 50 minutes is go through and show you what they're using to prove the so-called fact of evolution. I like to show you some of the evidence that they're using on these kids as evidence of evolution and tell you the truth about that evidence. So we're going to go through as many of the lies in the textbooks as we have time for, and then we'll take a short break, all right? Now, we already talked about, we talked about the Big Bang Theory in seminar number one. We talked about what's going on in our school system. We talked about a couple different worldviews, the creationist worldview and the evolutionary worldview, what it was like before the flood. I forgot I had these slides in there, sorry. Were dinosaurs on the ark? We talked about dinosaurs and dragons, and now dinosaurs have always lived with man. They are not millions or billions of years old. And now we're going to be talking about lies in the textbook, seminar part number four. And again, we are trying to cram about 3 hours worth of information into 45 minutes. So, here we go. Hey, if you knew that a maniac was going to deliver poisoned milk to your child's school in the morning, what would you do about it? I mean, if you knew your child was going to drink poisoned milk in the morning, to what extremes would you go to stop that from happening? Probably to any extreme, right? You would go a long ways to make sure that does not happen. You'd do just about anything it took to stop him. Ladies and gentlemen, on Monday morning when the kids go to school, they will be swallowing some poison. It's been very thoroughly mixed in with their science textbooks. It masquerades itself as part of science when really it has nothing whatsoever to do with science. Nothing whatsoever to do with science. It's the poison of evolution. Now, I've been amazed at my, as I travel and speak, two people can come to two totally different conclusions by looking at the exact same thing. Two people can be looking at one thing and come to totally different conclusions about what they're looking at. For example, one person can be standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and they can say, wow, look at what the Colorado River did over millions of years. Another person standing right next to them looking at the exact same evidence can say, wow, look what the flood did in a few days. Aren't they looking at the exact same thing? Yeah. How can they come to two totally different conclusions about what they're looking at? Anybody out there know what this thing right here is? Oh, it's on there because it's messed up. That is a... All right, it's labeled there for you. I think we can do a little bit better than that. That is a... All right, we can read. Good. That is a calf puller. You see, if a cow is having a hard time giving birth to a baby calf, they have to get out the calf puller. Okay? What they do is they take this thing, this contraption, and they hook this cable around the calf's back legs, and they actually jack the calf out of the cow. You put a couple tons of pressure, that thing's coming out, no problem. Well, once upon a time, there was a city fellow driving around in the country, and he saw a farmer using a calf puller. He got out of his car, jumped the fence, went over there, and was like, what in the world is going on? Farmer said, hey, help me out, man. This is a breech birth. We've got to get him out fast, otherwise he's not going to make it. Breech birth, that means the back legs are coming out first. City fellow said, okay, whatever I can do to help. So he started helping the farmer. Well, they got it born. They got the calf out, and it was a good, healthy calf. Praise God. They're walking up the barn to get washed up. Obviously need to get washed up after that. And the farmer said, man, you haven't said a word this whole time. You have any questions about what you just saw? City fellow said, yeah, I got a question that's been bugging me this whole time. Farmer said, well, what is it? City fellow said, how fast do you think that little one was going when it ran into that big one? No. Somebody got it wrong there. They saw the same thing, came to two totally different conclusions about what happened. Somebody saw it wrong. And I'm amazed how often evolutionists see the evidence, but they come to the wrong conclusion about what they're looking at. Here it is in the textbooks. Kids, boys and girls, over millions of years, the Colorado River has carved out the Grand Canyon from solid rock. Well, is that the truth? Is that what the evidence points to, or no? We've already seen that the Earth is not millions of years old, so they don't even have millions of years to do that. But let's examine the scientific evidence. Let's look at the facts and find out if that is even possible. And I'm sorry, I just upgraded to PowerPoint 2007, so I know you guys can see everything before I click the button. I know, I'm catching on to what you guys are doing there. But anyway, so sorry about that. It is a fact that the Grand Canyon exists. Is anybody going to argue with that fact? Anybody want to argue that? No. It's there. I've been there, seen it, have t-shirt, flown over it several times, hiked down inside of it. It is a big old hole in the ground. A couple years ago, my dad was speaking in Tucson, Arizona, and my wife and I got to go, and just because we need to suffer for Jesus, somebody said, can I get you a helicopter tour of the Grand Canyon? We were like, well, we'll pray about it. He said, okay. So we got to take a helicopter tour of the Grand Canyon. I mean, I've been all over that place. Really cool. It is there. Trust me. It's there. Big old hole in the ground. Now, how do we get there? See, the evolutionists say it forms slowly with a little bit of water and lots of time. The creationists say it formed very quickly with a lot of water and a little bit of time. Here we have a fact. Now, two different interpretations of the fact. And both cannot be right. Another example. The earth today has layers of sedimentary rock. Did those layers form slowly over millions of years? Or did they form very quickly from a flood? Here we have a fact and two different interpretations of the fact. How do you tell which one is true? Well, you get to decide which one you want to believe in, okay? Here's the problem. Evolutionists are always trying to erase the line between the fact and their interpretation of it. They try to make it sound like their interpretation of the fact is the fact. Here it is in the textbook, just to make sure you know this is exactly what they're doing. The Colorado River has cut through layer upon layer of rock over millions of years. You see it? They just tied their interpretation of the fact to the fact. It shouldn't be that way. Now, the Colorado River is there. The Grand Canyon is there. But I don't believe the Colorado River cut the Grand Canyon from solid rock over millions of years. And I can prove it. If you were to build a large dam across the Grand Canyon, a huge lake would back up and form. Big old giant lake, okay? After that lake forms, eventually that dam would get breached. The water would go over the dam. And if you've ever seen a breached dam, the water that breaches that dam can wash out a canyon very, very quickly. See, the Kaibab Uplift tells us the story here. Here's the Grand Canyon running right through an area known as the Kaibab Uplift. That white stuff is called snow. You ever heard of that stuff before? Snow? Okay. So the white stuff is called snow. That area of land is 6,900 to 8,500 feet above sea level. Okay? That's where that snow line is at. Now, the Colorado River enters Grand Canyon 2,800 feet above sea level, only this high. By the time it gets to the other side of the Kaibab Uplift, it has dropped 1,000 feet, and now it's way down here at 1,800 feet above sea level. But the top of Grand Canyon is way up here. So that river, to make that canyon, would have had to flow up and then down to carve out the Grand Canyon. That's not the case. Check it out here. We said all that. The top of Grand Canyon, you have to understand, is higher than the bottom. How many of you guys knew that already? Okay. The second thing you need to think about is that the river runs through the bottom, and the top of Grand Canyon is higher than where the river enters the canyon by more than 4,000 feet. I don't know if you realize this or not, but rivers do not flow uphill. They flow downhill. So there's also no delta. That river did not make that canyon. If the Colorado River formed Grand Canyon, it would have had to flow uphill, over the Kaibab Uplift, and then finally downhill in order to carve out the Grand Canyon. It starts at 2,800 feet above sea level. It did not make that canyon. That right there is a lie. That's lie number one. The river did not make that canyon. Okay? It is impossible. I wish we had time to go into, there's lots more evidence to point that out, but we got to cruise on, okay? 2 Peter chapter 3, we talked about this earlier. Knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days, scoffers, and the scoffers are looking after their own what? Scoffers are walking after their own what? That's what they're doing. They don't want to believe in a God because they like their sin. They enjoy their sin. It's not because of science that they scoff at the Bible. It's because of their lifestyle that they scoff at the Bible. And it says the scoffers are going to say, where's the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. That phrase right there in yellow is a very important phrase. All things continuously were from the beginning of the creation. What that's talking about is an idea called uniformitarianism. Uniformitarianism says the present is the key to the past. Well, guess what? In 1795, a guy named James Hutton wrote a book called The Theory of the Earth. And he brought out a brand new revolutionary idea that now the Bible is not the key to the past, but the present is the key to the past. And he's the one who instigated uniformitarianism in 1795 with his book, The Theory of the Earth. In that book, he said, I think the earth is a lot older than people currently think that it is. People used to think the earth is only a few thousand years old. He said, maybe it's a lot older than that. See, uniformitarianism is not, the present is not the key to the past. The Bible is the only perfect key to the past. Well, one guy that read this book and liked it because he hated the Bible was a guy named Sir Charles Lyell. Charles Lyell read this book and he loved it because it helped him get rid of God. So Charles Lyell liked it and he wrote a book in 1830 called The Principles of Geology. He wrote that book, and in that book, basically what he did was make fun of the Bible, ridicule the Bible. He said it's filled with ancient doctrine, and, you know, it supposedly rests on scriptural authority, and just basically made fun of the Bible. Well, Lyell, and I know I'm skipping a lot of stuff and going really fast, Lyell is one of the guys that came up with the geologic column. How many of you have heard of the geologic column before? You know what that is? It's all the layers to the earth that they show you, the Mesozoic and the Paleozoic and the Cretaceous and the Jurassic, where Jurassic Park comes from. All these layers to the earth. Well, he's one of the guys that helped form or come up with the geologic column. Back in the early 1800s, each layer of rock was given a name. It was also given an age. And it was given an index fossil. So they tried to discover how old it was, what kind of fossils you ought to find in it, and gave that layer a name. Now, how many of you learned that the way they tell how old something is based on carbon dating? You ever heard that? Well, carbon dating was invented in the 1950s. They dated these things back in the early 1800s. No, carbon dating is not where they came up with the millions and millions of years. Seminar number 7 covers a lot more on carbon dating. Really good stuff there. And the Bible, the geologic column, you have to understand, is the Bible for the evolutionist. They will refer to the geologic column just like I refer to the Bible. I say, well, if you look in 2 Peter chapter 3, they say, well, if you look at the Cretaceous period, and it is their Bible, it is the Bible for the evolutionist. And it can only be found one place in the entire world. Where is the one place in the world the geologic column can be found? The textbooks. That's exactly right. Only one place in the world, in the textbooks. Wow. If it did exist, it would be 100 miles thick. Check it out. Here is in a textbook. If there were a column of sediments, unfortunately no such column exists. They admit it. We do not have it. If it did, if it was in existence, it would be 100 miles thick. That's how big the geologic column would be. So that is a lie that is in the textbooks. There is no geologic column. There is no such thing. Now, are there layers to the earth? Yes, there are layers to the earth. Okay, no question about that. But if those layers were laid down over millions of years, shouldn't we see a little bit of erosion marks in between the layers? Surely over millions of years we'd see some kind of erosion going on, right? But we don't see anything. All we see is nice, neatly stacked layers all over the world. If you didn't know any better and you'd ever been to where a flood had been and you saw how flood waters can sort out dirt and can sort out stuff and put it in layers, if you didn't know that, you'd almost think that this world had been flooded before. That's the conclusion you'd probably come to if you didn't know any better. This textbook talks about circular reasoning. Check it out here. You wonder how do they tell how old the different things are? How do they tell how old the fossil is? How do they tell how old the rock is? Check this out. Page 306 says, they get the age of the rock based on what fossils are in the rock. They date the rock by the fossils. The very next page, it says, oh, the way they get the age of the fossils is based on what rock layer it's in. So you know how old the fossil is based on what rock layer it's in, and you know the age of the rock layer based on what fossil's in it. That's circular reasoning. That's all it is. Circular reasoning is another lie that is in the textbooks. I wish I had time to go into that into a lot more detail. How about these fossils, these index, so-called index fossils? In the textbooks, they're teaching the kids this. They'll say, boys and girls, the lobe-finned fish is the index fossil for rock that is 325 to 410 million years old. In other words, if you find a lobe-finned fish, a fossilized lobe-finned fish, then you know the rock that it is in is somewhere between 325 and 410 million years old. Well, what do you do when they find a lobe-finned fish still alive today? It's called the coelacanth. There it is today. If it's still alive today, couldn't it be found in just about any rock layer? Yeah. So it's not an index fossil, is it? No. There are no such thing as index fossils. They used to teach that graptolites were the index fossil for rock 410 million years old until they found out that graptolites were still alive. Now your kids are going to be taught that dinosaurs lived 70 million years ago, and they died out somewhere between 65 and 70 million years ago. You kids ever heard that one before? Yeah. That's simply not true. You know they found dinosaur bone, and there was blood still inside the bone? Last year, they discovered some dinosaur tissue that was not even fossilized, had not fossilized yet. Now, when they found the dinosaur tissue that was not fossilized, did it ever cross their mind, I wonder if this is not 70 million years old? Never crossed their mind. Instead of saying, when did this die, because it's not even fossilized yet, they said, maybe fossilization takes longer than we think. They never, ever question their theory of evolution. Maybe it didn't die 70 million years ago. Maybe that's your problem. I'm telling you, we would look at science a whole lot more open-mindedly if we would throw out the theory of evolution. We would really get down to some truths if we would just throw out the theory of evolution, okay? They found a magnolia leaf inside of shale. It was supposedly 18 million years old. They opened it up, and the leaf was still green. After 18 million years? Right, okay. I want to see something stay green for 18 million years. Give me a break. Oh, by the way, they have all these different ages. They say, you know, this age is 100 million, 200 million, 300, 400. They go right down here how old the different things are. Well, I got another problem for the old evolutionists and for the geologic column. You know they find polystrata fossils, fossilized trees running through all their different layers that are supposedly millions of years different in age? Yeah, little bitty problem there, huh? You want me to think that those trees stood upright for millions of years and did not rot and fall over while the sediment formed around it over millions of years? I'm not buying that. There is no way. They find these trees fossilized all over the world, standing up, running through all these different so-called layers millions of years old. You know what makes a lot of sense to me? Maybe those trees were buried in a big flood, and those layers formed around it as the flood waters were covering the earth. That makes a whole lot more sense than to believe that it grew through a couple hundred feet of rock looking for sunlight, doesn't it? Anyway, these things are found all over the world, these petrified trees. Some of the trees are even upside down running through the layers. You ever seen a tree grow like that? Well, look at that, kids. There's an upside down tree, roots up. Hey, you want an apple? Let's dig. I mean, you don't see that, okay? No. These trees had to be buried in a huge flood. Evolutionists only have two choices to solve this dilemma. Either the tree stood upright for millions of years while the sediments formed around it, or they grew through a couple hundred feet of rock looking to get the sun. Yeah, I'm thinking either one either. Maybe there's a third way to look at this. Maybe they were buried in a big flood. How fast is that cap going anyway? There's more than one way to look at things, okay? So you got all these layers to the earth, these so-called layers. Well, Charles Darwin, by the way, that is a lie. That's lie number five. The layers are not different ages. Charles Darwin, I don't know if you know this or not, at the age of 22, he had just gotten out of Bible college. Do you know that? Darwin graduated Bible college and couldn't get a job. From what I understand, he was a little bit lazy, but anyway, couldn't get a job, so his dad got him this deal to go on the HMS Beagle and sail around for a couple of years on the HMS Beagle. Well, he took his Bible with him on the Beagle because he was just out of Bible college, and he also took a book called The Principles of Geology by Sir Charles Lyell, the book that makes fun of the Bible and says the earth is a lot older than people think that it is. But he later said, disbelief crept over me at a very slow rate. But eventually, I lost respect for the Bible because of it. Wow. And over a couple-year period, he lost his respect for the Bible. One of the places that he stopped on his voyage around the world was the Galapagos Islands, right off the coast of South America. The famous Galapagos Islands, and something he observed on those islands were that there were a variety of finches on that island. He counted 14 different kinds of finches on the island. He was a bird hunter. He loved to kill birds because he liked insects, and birds eat insects. So he killed the birds, and so he would study these, and he found out 14 different varieties based on beak size and shape and thickness and stuff like that. 14 different varieties. Okay, neat. He said, you know what? I bet all of these birds had a common ancestor. I think he was right. I can't even tell him what it was. A bird. Charlie said, maybe though, just maybe the birds, these finches here, and the eagles are related. Wait. Maybe, I think I'm coming up with something here, maybe the worm and the bird are related. No, wait. Maybe I'm related to the bird. Later on in his book, he said, The Origin of Species, which is not the whole title. His whole title was The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, or The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. What does he mean by favored races? Yes, he was a racist. Darwin was a racist. He thought certain people had evolved higher than others. Anyway, he said in his book, it is a truly wonderful fact that all animals and all plants throughout all time and space should be related to each other. Isn't that kind of saying, like, I'm related to the tomato and to the bird? Yeah. That is a lie. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever of any of that. It's a theory. It's an idea. What Charles Darwin observed is often what we refer to as microevolution. Micro means small evolution. He observed the dog producing a variety of different dogs. Okay? Does that happen? Yes, dogs can produce a variety of different dogs. He saw the finches and how they could produce a variety of different finches. Does that happen? Yeah, that happens. You know, they saw that there have been a lot more studies on the finches in the Galapagos Islands. They've discovered that based on whether it's a dry season or a wet season, the bird's beak thickness changes. Over a one-year period, you can get a variation just like that. It's not that it took millions of years for this to happen. No, not at all. But he observed microevolution, and then he said, oh, well, maybe the dog and the rose are related. macroevolution. No, we've never seen that, never observed that. Now, evolutionists say, well, macro or big evolution is just microevolution over a long period of time. I love asking an evolutionist, hey, have we ever seen a dog produce a non-dog? No. If we could live for 100,000 years and see what the dog evolves into, that would be observing macroevolution, which I have a feeling it would stay a dog, but that would be observing macroevolution. Can we do that? Can we watch it for 100,000 years to see what it evolves into? So it's not part of science. You can't see it. You can't test it. You can't demonstrate it. You're welcome to believe that it's going to produce something different or that it did produce something different in the past, but you don't know that. That's not part of science. Does not fit with science. So Charles Darwin observed a fact, and then he jumped to a wrong conclusion. Good observation, bad conclusion about what he concluded. The dog has a variety of dogs. The Chihuahua and the Great Dane are both very different, but they're both still, if you consider the Chihuahua a dog. Personally, I'm kind of on the edge there about that one, okay? Maybe even the dog, the wolf, and the coyote had a common ancestor, but I guarantee you it was not that banana. Here we have a dog, wolf, coyote, and a banana. Which one doesn't look like the others?
The banana.
Hello. Anybody can tell you that, right? Obviously, it doesn't belong. See, the word evolution, we covered this last night, but just to give you a refresher course, has six different meanings. Cosmic evolution is the origin of time, space, and matter, the Big Bang. Can we see, test, or demonstrate that? No. What about chemical evolution? Where did all the elements that we have come from? Did they evolve from hydrogen and helium? Can we see, test, or demonstrate that? No. What about stellar and planetary evolution? Where did all the stars come from? We don't know. The Big Bang produced them all? I don't think so. We saw that last night. Can we see, test, or demonstrate how stars evolved? So should we call it part of science? What about organic evolution? Where did life come from to begin with? Have we ever seen life come from something that is not alive? No. What about macroevolution, changing from one kind of animal into another kind of animal? Have we ever seen that happen? Then we've got microevolution. That one is the one that we see all the time. That's the one that lots and lots of evidence is given for. I agree with it, for crying out loud. Yes, that happens. No doubt we see it. And here's where the argument lies every time. When I say evolution doesn't happen, I'm referring to all of these. When the evolutionist says, yes, it does, why can't you see all this evidence? They're only referring to this one. There's a mix-up in the terminology. We keep missing each other there. The rest of those, though, are a religion. You have to believe that they occurred. Now, you are welcome to believe that. It is a free country. Well, relatively speaking, unless you want to park on the wrong side of the street or build something. Anyway, you can believe whatever you want to believe, okay? But understand that you believe that, you don't know that. It is a religious worldview. So Charles Darwin observed microevolution and jumped to the conclusion of macroevolution. Yeah, maybe the dog and the rose are related and their common ancestor was a rock. Well, where did that come from? That's exactly what they believe, though. It's exactly what they teach. And teachers are often give students one definition of the word evolution, microevolution. And then they get the kids to believe in macroevolution from that. So they're given one definition. Descent with modification. Evolution is descent with modification. Boys and girls, you look different from your parents, don't you? See, you're evolving. That's evolution. It's just these little bitty changes. No, that is not evolution. That is a variation. That's what you are designed to do. That's not evolution. Here it is in the textbooks. How do you define evolution? Textbook says, evolution is change over time. Hold it. I might disagree with that. I mean, if it really is a change over time, okay, but does that include cosmic, chemical, stellar and planetary, organic, macroevolution? Later they define it as, oh, evolution is a change in living things over time. Well, I agree with that to a certain extent. Then later on they say, oh, evolution is a change in species over time. Well, that's exactly what I agree with. I agree with that one. Can the species change with minor changes over time? Yes. But the rabbit is always going to be a... That's not going to change. It doesn't go any farther than that. So there's a lot of confusion just over the definition of the word evolution. We can't define that word. So point number seven, when they talk about evolution, that's not really what they mean, just changing species. They're talking about the whole general evolution idea, just so you know, okay? The real meaning of evolution is slipped in as the kids continue to be, quote, educated. Now, the kids are led to believe that cosmic evolution and organic evolution and all the others are all part of the evolution theory. And if some kid says, hang on, I don't agree with that, they're told, well, you just don't understand modern science. Any objection to evolution is, the result is, well, ridicule them, you know, put them down, tell them they don't understand science. Isn't that exactly what's happened in our academic world today? Where now if a professor questions evolution, he gets expelled for questioning Darwinian evolution. Because there's a stronghold there, and it's about time somebody stands up and does something about it. So I can't wait to go see the movie. I haven't seen it yet. Anybody go last night to see the movie Expelled? Anybody see it last night? Oh, and it's good? Cannot wait. Man, cannot wait to go see that. So 7:40 tonight at the West Park. I remembered it. West Park 8, which is just a couple miles from here. I'll have directions for you. Kyle emailed them to me, so I got them on my phone. I'll give you those directions later. Not now, because it'll interrupt. It already did interrupt. Let's move on. Okay. This is dreaming, okay? No one has ever seen a dog produce something that is not a dog, okay? Plus, you have to imagine that all this stuff happened long ago and far away. There's no evidence of it. And it's religion. It's not part of science, for crying out loud. There are genetic barriers to prevent it from turning into something else. You can't turn it into something else. There are genetic barriers to prevent that. Who would the partly evolved dog marry? Okay, evolution happened. Now you got half a dog, half a banana. Now what? Who's he going to marry? Nobody. It's going to get mixed right in, and he's actually going to get eliminated. Variations, if it varies too far from the norm, will get eliminated by natural selection. We agree with natural selection. Let's try natural selection out on the chihuahuas. Let's put the chihuahuas loose in the real world. How long is it going to take them to evolve the defense mechanism to the wolf? Crunch. End of gene pool. And while the chihuahua's getting eaten, he's probably thinking to himself, man, I've got to evolve a way to defend myself against the wolf. How can I? It's impossible. It's not the way it works. Okay. And how would the intermediate forms live? They say birds evolved from dinosaurs. Ha! I got to see that. Show me that thing halfway in the evolution process. Now you got a dinosaur with half an arm and half a wing. He can't run and he can't fly. That's called supper. He ain't going to evolve into anything, but you know what they're doing with the kids' toys today? Check it out. They're showing the kids dinosaurs, and what are on the dinosaur's arms? Feathers. Ridiculous. They develop from totally different chromosomes in the gene structure, in the DNA structure. Feathers and scales are very, very different. It's not like you can just throw some feathers on a dinosaur and he can fly. It doesn't work that way, okay? There's some serious, serious problems there. Now, variations do happen. However, they have limits, okay? Farmers have been trying to get bigger pigs. You think they'll ever get a pig as big as Texas? No, because there's a limit to how far it can go, how big it can get. Roaches have become resistant to pesticides. So it's still a roach. It hasn't evolved into anything new yet, has it? No. Plus, I guarantee you, roaches will never become resistant to a sledgehammer. Can you see that? Let's try that experiment for a few years and see how long it takes the roach to evolve the resistance to a sledgehammer. Boom. Nope. Boom. Nope. Boom. Nope. Come on, guys. Evolve. Boom. Nope. Boom. It's never going to happen. You can't get that kind of stuff, okay? They always produce the same kind of animal or plant. It's never going to produce something new. Plus, the information for any variation was already there to begin with. Okay, and nothing new can get added. You're never going to get a pink dog. You don't have that information to begin with. You're never going to breed wings on a dog and teach it how to fly, because that information is not in the animal to begin with. You're never going to come up with that information. Plus, the gene pool of the new variety is more limited than before, and it's less able to adapt to future changes. The new variety is going to be a narrower slice of the gene pool. He can't survive as good out in the wild. Chihuahuas in the real world? Yeah, right. They ain't going to make it for 2 days, man, quivering in the corner and then dead. Genetic information is always lost, not added. We're not adding new genetic information here. Real evolution would require an increase in genetic complexity. But all we ever see is a shift in gene frequency. You get all kinds of different kinds of corn. Well, you can selectively breed to make sure you get the character traits that you want in the corn. So you can get the sweet corn, or you can get the feed corn, or you can get the different types of corn that you want. But it's always corn. And they got a lot of different kinds of corn out there, okay? ABC, XY, BX, 65. Don't mix it with CPR, 34. Something's going to explode. I don't know. But I was born in Illinois, corn country, and they got a lot of different kinds of corn. I guarantee, how many times have they planted a corn seed in the ground? How many times has that happened throughout history? Millions of times, right? Possibly billions of times. Every single time, what grows from planting that corn seed? What comes up out of the ground? Isn't that amazing? Corn comes up. Are you sure about that? You think they could ever get a tomato or a hamster or a whale to come up out of there? It's just impossible, guys. Corn is always going to produce corn. Evolution doesn't happen. There's a variety of horses today, but they all go back to the modern day, to the original horse. We got big horses and little horses today, but it goes back to a horse. Okay, you can even crossbreed the horses, the stallions, the zebras, and the donkeys. Come up with all kinds of stuff. This lady did it. She came up with a zorse, a zonkey, a zony, all kinds of unique stuff. Very, very interesting. So it's not like they're not interfertile. They're also interfertile. A variety of cows in the world today. Guys, variations happen. I agree with it. Microevolution, don't even call it evolution. Variation is what we should call it. That happens. But that's not evolution at all, okay? That's not really what evolution is. A lot of the kids today are being indoctrinated with evolution rather than educated. They get indoctrinated rather than educated. They're told that evolution is true rather than being shown the different facts and letting the kids come to their own conclusion. Now, I'm not against public school teachers. My grandmother retired from teaching in public school. My Uncle Ross just retired. My dad's brother just retired from teaching in the public school system after 35 years. I'm not against public school teachers, but for crying out loud, somebody's got to tell the kids the truth. Don't lie to the kids, teachers, okay? Teach them the truth. A lot of people who believe in evolution want to convert others to believe what they believe. That's fine. But if they use lies to support their theory, is that right? No. If I had a theory that said, I believe the moon is made up of green cheese, is that okay for me to have that theory? Well, yeah, because there's no law against stupid theories. But if I said, yeah, NASA proved it when they went there on a secret mission back in 1969. Now I'm lying to support my theory, aren't I? That's exactly what's happened with evolution. Is there anything wrong with having a dumb theory called evolution? No. Now, if you use lies to support it, though, that's an issue. That is a problem, okay? And in order for people to believe in the lie of evolution, they have to offer some evidence. Unfortunately, their evidence has been disproven or has been proven to be not the case. Now, if a textbook or teacher knows this, but they continue teaching evolution, they'd be lying to the kids, wouldn't they? Teachers do not lie to the kids, okay? Now, they give lots of evidence, supposed evidence of evolution in the textbooks. Let's go through just a couple of these real quick. Evolution is based on two faulty assumptions. They say, well, first of all, mutations take place to make something brand new, and then natural selection helps that mutation to take over the population. No, it doesn't work that way. Now, do mutations happen? Yes, mutations happen. Roses, the rose today, is a mutant from the original rose, which only had 5 petals on it. Today's rose, with all those petals, is mutated. They selected it all the way to get what they currently have today. If you put it back out into the wild, a few generations later, it would be 5 petals back to the original rose. Wow. So mutations happen, but no matter how many mutations you have, you never produce a new kind of animal. It's always the same kind, okay? Here's a mutated bull. It's a bull with an extra leg growing out of its back. It's mutated. Hey, notice, nothing new was added, was it? It's not a wing. It's not feathers. Nothing new is into it. It already knew how to make a leg. It just made it in the wrong place. Is that a beneficial mutation? Can that cow run any faster? Not a bit. Here's a mutated sheep, short-legged sheep. Notice what it says. It says, this mutation would not last in nature. Of course it's not going to last, man. That's the first one the wolf is going to catch. The wolf is going to come, and the sheep are going to take off running. They're going to look back and say, uh-oh, Herman didn't make it. Of course he can't make it, man. That's natural selection, weeding out the weaker, which is what Hitler wanted to do with people, by the way. That's a whole other subject. Seminar number 5 goes into that. Notice, though, no new information was added. The only information was lost, not added. Here's a mutated turtle, a two-headed turtle. It's mutant, but not ninja, okay? Two-headed turtle. That's not a beneficial mutation. It's not helpful. And is that mutation going to get passed down to the children? Should that turtle be able to reproduce? No, it doesn't pass on that mutation. Here's a mutated fly. It's got 4 wings. Look at what the textbook says about this mutation. It says, normal fruit flies have 2 wings. This mutant has 4. This rare mutation, like most, is harmful. Then it says, beneficial mutations are the raw material for natural selection. All the mutations we see are harmful. But the good ones that we don't see, those are the ones that cause natural selection to help out evolution. But we don't see them. No, we don't see those. But those are the ones that do it. But we don't see them. No, that'd be nice if we saw them, but, you know, I gotta go. They don't see any beneficial mutations. So there is a lie number 9 for you. There are no beneficial mutations. No such thing as a beneficial mutation. Some people say, well, yeah, there are people in Africa that if they get sickle cell anemia, they can't get malaria. That's brilliant. That's like saying, hey, did you know if you cut off your feet, you can't get athlete's foot? Well, duh. That's not a beneficial mutation, okay? They say natural selection causes evolution. No. Natural selection prevents evolution. Natural selection makes sure things stay the way they're supposed to be. If it goes off too much, that dies out. If you let it go too far, natural selection brings it back and says, no, this is the way it's supposed to be. They say natural selection causes evolution. Nothing could be further from the truth. See, natural selection can act only on the properties that already exist. Natural selection can't make something new. And natural selection can't say, oh, roach, you're about to get hit with a sledgehammer. Evolve this defense mechanism. And poof, natural selection created this defense mechanism. It can't do that. It can't throw something in there. It can't help. All it can do is keep the race pure and strong. That's all it can do. So that's lie number 10. Natural selection does not cause evolution. If we had a factory, this is an example of natural selection. If we had a factory that produced cars, and at the end of the assembly line, we had somebody inspect the vehicle, make sure it was in good condition. If that was the case, and nothing ever changed, how long would it take for an airplane to come out of the end of that factory? You say it's not going to happen. Precisely my point. And natural selection cannot make something new. It can only keep it the way it's supposed to be. That's all natural selection does. They try to say peppered moth is evidence of evolution. How many of you have ever heard that? Peppered moth is evidence of evolution. What a bunch of baloney. First of all, the whole experiment, this so-called peppered moth experiment, was faked. They faked the experiment. They say they went around and counted moths on the trees. They found a black moth and a white moth. That's a moth right there. And then they supposedly, you know, after they burned coals in the factory in England, the trees turned dark. And so they went back and recounted the moths, and after the trees turned dark, they found, oh, now there's more black moths than there are white moths. So it's still a moth. No, that's evolution. Okay, it started as a moth, and now it's a moth. I must be missing something here. That's evolution? Yeah. It went from dark to light. Are you sure it's not because the birds can eat the dark ones on the light trees and eat the light ones on the dark trees, and that's what happened? You know? Anyway, peppered moth, that whole thing was phony. All the evidence that they used to do that whole experiment was made up. It was a totally made-up experiment, kind of like my 8th grade science project, but that's another story. The conclusions they came to from the peppered moth experiment, they said, well, the moth population ratio shifted from mostly white to mostly black as the trees turned black. Uh-huh. Well, the moth population adapted to the new environment. Uh-huh. Well, see, this helps prove we all came from a rock. What? How do you come up with that, man? That's out of left field. Where is that coming from? Survival of the fittest. You ever heard that phrase before? Hey, survival of the fittest does not explain the arrival of the fittest. It's a tautology. If I said, hey, why did it survive? You'd say, because it is the fittest. How do you know it's the fittest? Because it survived. Hey, if a whale goes through and eats 80% of a school of fish, that is not survival of the fittest. That is survival of the luckiest. That's what that is, okay? Not survival of the fittest. A lot of people make good observations, but they come to the wrong conclusions about what they observe. They did fruit fly experiments. They raised 80,000 generations of fruit flies. Did all kinds of things to the normal fruit flies to have it make mutated babies. They got all kinds of mutations. They got flies with white eyes, flies with curly wings, flies like this. They got flies with no wings at all. What do you call that? A crawl? You can't fly. So they got all these mutated flies. Well, after 80,000 generations of fruit flies, which is like millions of years in the human world, 80,000 generations of fruit flies, they came to some conclusions. They said, well, all the mutations produced flies that were inferior to the original fly. Mm-hmm. Well, that just helps prove that fruit flies have evolved as far as they can go. What? Hello, maybe the fruit fly ain't evolving. Maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe it's not evolving to begin with. Maybe that's why you didn't see any evolution going on. Look at this. Darwin as fit as ever. Ladies and gentlemen, fruit flies in the north have wings 4% larger than flies in the south. Darwin as fit as ever. Evolution is in action. It is adapting at breathtaking speed here. 4% larger wings. This is their evidence that we all evolved from a rock. I am missing something, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, either I am really messed up or they are really delusional. Something is going on here. They tell the kids to think critically, but they don't really want them to think critically because if they think critically, they'll question evolution. Here's what they tell the kids, or they ask the kids, hey, do you think humans are still evolving? Think about it, kids. What kind of a question is that? That's kind of like if I asked you, hey, have you stopped beating your wife yet? How do I answer that? If I say yes, that means I was beating her. If I say no, I'm still doing it. The question assumes evolution is taking place, doesn't it? That's what it assumes. Do you think humans are still evolving? Please. The question is very poorly written. It assumes evolution has already taken place. I've got to skip all this. We have evidence. They say there's evidence from structure, which is, how animals have a similar structure in their bones. Boys and girls, look, the humans have a radius and an ulna in their forearm. Boys and girls, look, the cat has a radius and ulna in their forearm. The whale has a radius and an ulna. Oh, my goodness, it's amazing. We must have all evolved from a rock. No, maybe there was a similar designer. They say, oh, see, we all had a common ancestor. I say, no, we had a common designer. Did you know that Honda, Toyota, and Ford put four wheels on most of their vehicles? That proves they all evolved from a skateboard 20 million years ago. No, Similar design proves a similar designer. It was a good design, so he used it over and over and over. I wish we had time to go into that. Comparative anatomy, that is another lie. Lie number 12. Similar design proves a common designer. The conclusions they came to from the comparative anatomy, many animals have a similar form and structure. They must have had a common ancestor. Helps prove we all came from a rock. Absolutely a lie. I wish we could go into the vestigial organs. Oh, hang on. Wish we could go into the vestigial organs. I wish we could go into the whale pelvis and femur, the supposed pelvis and femur in the whale. Wish we could go into all these different lies. Oh, there's so many that I'd love to go into, but it would take us another hour and a half to go through all these, so I don't have time to do that. Ooh, we got to wrap up, take a break, and we got to come back for my favorite message, God Quest, okay? But we go through a whole lot more lies that are in the textbooks. Here's the truth. The biologist, if you ask him, where's the evidence for evolution? He says, oh, the geologist has it. If you say, okay, geologist, where's the evidence for evolution? They say, oh, the anthropologist has it. If you say, anthropologist, where's the evidence for evolution? He says, oh, the biologist has it. Where's the evidence? Oh, geologist, where's the evidence? It's like a giant, you know, shell game where you put a pea under a shell and they try to confuse you as to where it's at. The only problem is there's no pea. There is no evolution. There is no evidence of evolution. It did not happen. A great book and DVD that we now offer is called Icons of Evolution. It's a book and DVD by Jonathan Wells. He is not a young earth creationist, but he is involved in the movie Expelled, which we're going to see tonight at 7:40. Going to be really, really good. Anyway, he did a great job going through the so-called Icons of Evolution. Adolf Hitler said, let me control the textbooks and I will control the state. Boys and girls, you are under the control, yeah, because of the textbooks. You're under their control. If you swallow that lie of evolution, you've been brainwashed and you're theirs. I'm telling you, it's just that simple. I wish we had time to go in to talk about what you can do to fix the problem. Watch seminar number 4. It's online at drdino.com. You can download it and watch it for free. You can download audio and listen to just the audio for free. You can buy a copy of seminar number 4 and figure out what you need to do in your area. You can copy somebody else's that they bought because you're like me and get that. The bottom line is get this information, okay? Somehow digest this information, get it, and make a difference. Do something. You can get creation materials into your libraries. You can demand that schools take stuff out of the textbooks that has bad information or outdated information. We have a little brainwashed book that I'd love to sell you. It's about 55 pages, and it goes through how kids are being brainwashed with the idea of evolution. You can get students legal rights and teach them about what they're allowed to do in their school. Don't confront teachers publicly. If you're late to class or if you're a troublemaker and if you never do your homework and you don't pay attention in class, do not tell them that you're a Christian. You're not helping the situation, okay? Start making good grades, be on time, be good, sit up straight, do your homework, pay attention, then make a difference for creation, all right? If a test question comes up that says, asks about evolution, say the textbook says this, however, that is not correct. You can learn the material without swallowing it, and you're allowed to be exempt from classes that teach things contrary to your religious beliefs. They have to provide optional material. Give your teachers a video to watch. Maybe have them pray for them. Have them show a video in the class. Invite them to a creation seminar. They can call or write us with any questions that they have about evolution. Show a DVD, show a seminar in the classroom about creation versus evolution. Give the kids a sporting chance, for crying out loud. Show them both sides. Let them choose. I mean, you're not allowed to hunt at night with a spotlight, are you, for deer? I mean, because you got to give the deer a sporting chance. Let's give the kids at least a sporting chance instead of just indoctrinating them. Oh, I wish I had time to go into all this. But we got to quit. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back, and we will talk about God Quest. Any announcements real quick? No. Again, our ministry is supported by your love offerings. I really appreciate that, and they've just made a place for you to drop in the back. You can make, if you want to make out any donations to support the ministry in Florida, make that out to EFCI. That's the Evangelical Formation Church of Irvine. Just make that out to EFCI, and they'll be happy to take that, and we really appreciate it. Thank you guys for being here. We'll start in exactly 10 minutes with the next session, okay? 10 minutes.